This is Ancient Faith Today with Kevin Allen, Orthodox Christian Media's program for illuminating and informative conversation about subjects that matter through the lens of Scripture and the teaching tradition of the Eastern Orthodox Church. Here's Kevin Allen.
Welcome to Ancient Faith Today. You know, for almost 50 years, the Antiochian Archdiocese in North America has been a well-known advocate for Orthodox unity, or one local Orthodox church in North America, primarily through the support of Metropolitan Philip Saliba of Thrice Blessed Memory. At the recent 6th Assembly of Bishops meeting in Chicago this last September, which has been charged by an agreement signed at Chambassy, Switzerland, by the 14 autocephalous patriarchs, including the Patriarchate of Antioch, to meet as assemblies in areas which do not have a singular canonical Orthodox church, and it is charged with the role of proposing a way to unify the 12 U.S. jurisdictions into one united local Orthodox church, according to canonical standards of one bishop, one city, one church. The Antiochian Archdiocese of North America, one of the three largest in the United States, along with the other 12 Orthodox churches in the assembly, gave a formal response to the Committee for Regional Canonical Planning's proposal for unity. And in the statement now made public, the Antiochian Christian Archdiocese of North America essentially seemed to reverse its long-standing position, rejecting in its statement any separation from the Mother Church of Antioch, proposing that the Episcopal Assembly be a voluntary assembly, not a formal synod, rejecting any restructuring of present geographical boundaries, even those with overlapping bishops, and defining unity as allowing, quote, for the continued work and support of each of the jurisdictions for their people and continued unity with the respective mother churches. Well, in this interview, I will discuss the new position statement of the Antiochian Archdiocese on unity in North America and the reasons for it with the very Reverend Patrick O'Grady. Father Patrick is the senior priest of St. Peter the Apostle Antiochian Orthodox Church in Pomona, California, and has been blessed by his Antiochian primate, Metropolitan Joseph, to speak for the Archdiocese in this interview. And in keeping with Ancient Faith Radio's policy of full disclosure, I should say that I have been a member of the Antiochian Archdiocese for 21 years. Father Patrick O'Grady, thank you for joining me on Ancient Faith Today.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
So, Father, let's begin here. Given our previous Metropolitan Philip's support for administrative unity of the Orthodox jurisdictions in North America, how would you differentiate the positions or the approaches of Metropolitan Philip Saliba and the current Antiochian primate Metropolitan Joseph towards the idea of one local Orthodox church in the U.S.?
Metropolitan Philip Saliba of blessed memory has provided for us, through his prodigious organizational and evangelistic talents, a groundwork, a framework, a foundation for advancing the Orthodox presence in this continent. And through the 48 years of his tenure as Metropolitan Archbishop of New York and leader of the Antiochian Church here in this country, he's worked tirelessly to establish relationships, to build structures. In short, his talents were organizational and evangelistic. Metropolitan Joseph has been here in this archdiocese for over 20 years, and in that time, he worked to build upon Metropolitan Philip's organizational accomplishments by bringing a personalism, an interrelational vision of ministry, a confraternal vision, in order to strengthen the spiritual and, you might say, invisible aspects of our orthodoxy in this country. Metropolitan Philip was an organized and methodical laborer, Metropolitan Joseph is a community-oriented and more relational gifted leader of our church, and we are now in a whole new world. After a couple of years of transition, we find ourselves in a considerably changed circumstances in this country as well as in the Middle East. There are many undercurrents that are at work here. But in short, Metropolitan Joseph is committed to extending and building upon the work of Metropolitan Philip, but in his own way and with his own charisms.
So here's the $64,000 question. Then we're going to get into some of the reasons for the statement and many other issues, Father Patrick O'Grady. So is the new position of Antioch and the Antiochian Archdiocese of North America permanently against unity, or is it more of an issue of means and timing in your view and in the Archdiocese's view?
This is very straightforward. Metropolitan Joseph is still committed to advancing the cause of Orthodox unity in this country. I think it's very important to stress that what unity is. Unity is, as St. Paul speaks, it is speaking the truth in love. Unity cannot exist only on an organizational or exterior or jurisdictional, like institutional framework, but it has to be developed from very deep and abiding commitments on the part of all of the people involved.
Let me read this to you, Father. You know the statement well. The statement presented by Antioch reads, quote, "The Holy Synod of the Patriarch and her Patriarch John or Johanna 10 remains committed to the unity of the Patriarchate with all the Antiochian faithful wherever they are." So with respect, the statement itself doesn't exactly sound like a temporary position, but a new position on Orthodox ecclesiology or church governance, one where there are no official geographical boundaries, which is not really what Orthodox canons call for. Would you like to comment?
Sure, of course. Okay, first of all, there is no land in the world where the relationship with the mother churches involved were not sustained after the granting of autocephaly. History is rugged. Sometimes there are partitions that are at first forced, and then settlements are made afterwards, and then sometimes there are settlements made up front, and then the relationship goes on from there. This is the way human beings relate to each other. Sometimes there's a fight, and then you make up and you hug. Sometimes you agree ahead of time and you make progress that way. As far as we're concerned, we have no intention ever of separating our relationship with the Mother Church, with Patriarch Johanna and the Holy Synod of Antioch. This is our Mother Church. The See of Antioch was the first of the Christian metropolitan churches, and it's a venerable and long-standing tradition which we intend never to break. When the day comes when Orthodox in this country are mature enough and have established the framework of relationships suitable for the gift of autocephaly without sundering relations to our mother churches, then it'll be an organic and obvious thing and will not be a rupture.
So I've got to follow up with that. I've heard that argument that we're not ready for an American Orthodox Church. Is it the position of the Patriarch of Antioch and the Antiochian Christian Archdiocese of North America that, you know, after 200 years of the Orthodox being in America, having 8 seminaries, 55 bishops, thousands of parishes and cathedrals, 71 male and female monastic communities, media of all kind, thousands of seminary-trained priests, Orthodox international and domestic philanthropic organizations founded, formed, and funded in and by the United States that were not mature enough to manage our own affairs?
It's not a matter of institutional maturity, such as you've listed. These are all wonderful achievements. The problem, I think, lies in our American culture. We value, as North Americans, independence as a virtue. This is a problem.
It's in our DNA.
Yeah, it's in our DNA, and it's something that's made us great, but it's also cut us off from a lot because we've turned ourselves away from some elements of the old world, which we really desperately need in order to be full and complete people. So we have condemned ourselves to a kind of naive view of self-importance with a minimal view of history and a large sense of destiny, you know, the American, the manifest destiny, that kind of thing. And also, we are not an ethnic-based state like the old world states were. So we don't really have the sense of nationhood, that is to say, ethno, like a mono-ethnic state as the old world. So we find it very difficult to grasp the very real pastoral needs which each ethnic people in the old world had, and they brought with them to this new world. This takes time to work out. Each people have a certain language, a culture, and here in America, to become truly autocephalous, that is in the fundamental and apostolic sense of that word, is
and meaning
church.
Meaning self-headed for
That's
those that
right.
don't
self-headed.
Know that.
But this is our Orthodox concept of that. It's not institutional. It's really apostolic. It has to do with the grounding of a church in its people. We're not there yet.
You know, his beatitude in Antioch's current patriarch, Johanna or John 10, was the Church of Antioch's delegate to the official preconciliar meetings in Chambassy, Switzerland in 2008, although the process leading up to this was over the last 20 years. And our patriarch personally signed the documents which established the Episcopal Assemblies, tasking them with the role and the responsibility for eradicating the canonical anomaly of having multiple jurisdictions and bishops. So, given the Antiochian Orthodox Christian Archdiocese of North America's indisputable record, Father Patrick O'Grady, of support for a united American Orthodox Church for near 50 years, let's go through what you feel are the main reasons for the seeming reversal of the position of the Antiochian Archdiocese in terms of reorganizing the 12 jurisdictions into one local Orthodox Church.
Okay, first of all, the signing at Chambézy was a mutual effort that all of the senior pastors of the local churches of Orthodoxy, the many that signed there, expressed their apostolic confraternity in that meeting and that signature, and were dedicated to that living process. However, the Episcopal Assembly, as we see it now, is not expressing that confraternity sufficiently. And this is the reason why the statement that Metropolitan Joseph has issued, why the statement has come out, especially I'm referring to the language where it says, "We suggest that the Assembly of Bishops in the United States work as a voluntary assembly of all the canonical bishops." The reason why he said this is because that's exactly the spirit in which the Episcopal Assembly is carrying on its work. It is not the spirit of Chambézy. It is the spirit of some other spirit. And the experience that Metropolitan Joseph has had there is one of a confraternity on an exterior level only. And there remains to be done the very serious personal engagement with the other hierarchs involved in order to go deep and to express this true apostolic egalitarianism. I'd like to stress that word, egalitarianism and mutual respect. So that's the tip of the iceberg here.
Which the Antiochian Archdiocese does not feel exists at the assembly at this point?
Yes, that's correct.
Isn't an assembly like this an appropriate, and you please disagree if you want to, not an appropriate forum for the development of such fraternal relations and working out a solution to the anomalies that exist in the U.S.?
Yes, but look, we've got sensitive matters that charity demands be handled with discretion. And that is, Metropolitan Joseph is trying to initiate meaningful conversations with the other hierarchs involved. And until that's forthcoming, it seems to be a waste of time.
It's just kind of a setting of an agenda from imposed and meetings and so on?
Is that what you're saying? This is exactly right. The imposition of an agenda and basically a framework of relationship that is alien to the original, you might say, inspiring element behind it.
And I've heard, following up on that, Father Patrick O'Grady, that some leaders of the Antiochian Archdiocese feel that, not all, but some, feel that the assembly is too much driven by politics with an imposed underlying agenda. Would that be an accurate characterization, and would you be able to articulate what you perceive as being such an underlying agenda?
Well, first of all, let me throw out a kind of a little quip here that sort of works anywhere. As soon as you get two or three human beings together talking about something serious, you have politics. Okay? In other words, the secular equivalent of where two or three are present in my name, there am I in the midst. So we have two or three human beings together talking about some issue, and you get politics. So, yes, of course we're driven by politics. However, it shouldn't be mere politics. Politica, politics, having to do with the polis, the city. We have to talk about stuff. This is not a negative thing. But it's not enough. In the church, we have something very deep, and it's a brotherhood of love, and really drawing upon the ancient apostolic confraternity that we see in the holy synods of the early church, this same brotherhood or apostolicity is fundamental for the granting of respect. And if I may, at some point I'm looking forward to expressing that more clearly, and I don't know if this is the question you want to do this through, but I'm looking forward to explaining why that is not so. So.
Now, I did ask about the underlying agenda. I don't want to mention any names, but are you saying that the imposition of an agenda has in the view of the Antiochians, has a predetermined goal that we object to?
Yes. In short, the Church of Antioch is a sister church to the other churches of Orthodoxy, the Church of Constantinople, that of Jerusalem, that of Alexandria, Russia, and etc. We have a brotherhood of churches which together with one faith express the apostolic confraternity. So Jesus called the 12, so here we have the many churches but the one church. There is a doctrine regarding this one church that we reject, and that is first of all, the subsuming of the Church of Constantinople of the role of primacy of honor. This is well accepted and understood since Rome left our company a long time ago. So Constantinople, as second in honor, presides in honor. However, this is not primacy of jurisdiction outside the territories of the old world churches. And this is the problem here. The Episcopal Assembly seems to be governed by a kind of innovative interpretation of the Fourth Ecumenical Synod's 28th Canon. We reject this interpretation. I'm referring especially to the Ecumenical Patriarchate's emissary who spoke here in this country a few years ago and interpreted that canon very carefully. We reject this interpretation. The Canon 28 was not accepted widely at the time and was always understood to refer to the immediate area around New Rome, Thrace, Scythia, and so on. But here we are in over 1,000 years later in a new world where many, many Orthodox precede the coming of the Constantinopolitans to this country and already have a long history. We have to have a new way here, and it has to be built on mutual respect. In short, the Church of Constantinople cannot impose universal jurisdiction over the Orthodoxy in this country. If that's going to be the agenda, we have no way forward.
And by the way, just to add to our conversation for our listeners, this view by Antioch on Canon 28 is not a new one. In fact, in the early 1990s at the Inner Orthodox Preparatory Commission, leading up to a Great and Holy Council, which is now planned for 2016, Romania, Moscow, and Antioch argued that Canon 28 was overridden by earlier provisions, such as 1 Constantinople Canon 2, which reads, quote, "The churches of God and heathen nations must be governed according to the customs which has prevailed from the time of the fathers, i.e., a local autocephalous church." Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to throw that in. So that is the canon that you are going by, not by the Canon 28, and some are.
Yes, okay. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Father Patrick O'Grady, would the Antiochians disagree, though, that administrative unification, in addition to the spiritual, theological, and sacramental unity, which some say we already have, would you disagree that administrative unification is an equally integral part of the Orthodox definition of unity in terms of polity and governance?
Yes, but let's put the horse in front of the cart and not the other way around. This is where we get in trouble. If we start adding up numbers and applying budgets and assigning responsibilities before we have a fundamental relationship of faith working through love, mutual trust, mutual respect, and a knowledge of one another. We have to know one another. Let us talk to one another so we know our burdens, our desires, our visions. Then it's obvious that we're sitting down and working together, and the administration, the organization, the structure of the one holy Catholic and Apostolic Church in this country will express itself quite naturally.
But it still would have to be agreed to by all of the 14 autocephalous mother churches, no?
Well, I think, as I said before, human relationships are sometimes rocky. Sometimes you work out an answer to something that is maybe not known ahead of time, and other times it works out quite by divine mercy and divine grace. We have to trust God a little bit in this process. We just have to do our homework. If we do our homework, if we're present, look, we're trying to express something. When Metropolitan Joseph stands absent at the Episcopal Assembly, he's saying something. Let's keep in mind that silence on the part of the bishop sometimes speaks louder than words. Citing from St. Ignatius now.
What is he saying?
He says, the silence of the bishop is louder than a word. And for the bishop to descend into always running around with his head cut off, trying to be everywhere and complaining about this or that, is inappropriate. We have an apostolic figure here. So when he's silent or when he steps away, we should pay attention and say, okay, what's wrong? What's happening? That's what's going on here. By his silence, he's speaking. And what is that word? That word is a word of sobriety. It's a word of seriousness. Metropolitan Joseph, in his silence, is saying, let us be more serious about this process. This is a human process that's profound and is very important for our country and for the salvation of our people. So let us pay attention to that. Can we work a little bit ascetically and ask ourselves, what's wrong with this picture?
To what extent, Father Patrick, moving on a little bit, is the Syrian crisis and Iraq and the Middle East in general something that has affected the Antiochian Archdiocese and its statement and intention not to separate from the Mother Church at this point?
Okay, let's address the Syrian one in just a moment. It is important. I would just like to undergird a little bit more the, you might say, the track record or the actual experience that Metropolitan Joseph has shown in his commitment to unity and confraternity on the principle of apostolic respect, mutual respect, and egalitarianism. I want to give a couple of elements to underscore that. It would be a shame if I didn't get to express these. So briefly, when Metropolitan Joseph was our archbishop in the West, in the diocese of the West of the Antiochian Archdiocese, he worked very hard and achieved a great deal in pan-Orthodox unity by fostering a episcopal confraternity among the other Orthodox bishops of the West, the Greek Metropolitan of San Francisco, Hierasimos, Archbishop Benjamin of the Orthodox Church in America, Bishop Maxim of the Serbian Orthodox Church, Diocese of the West, and he offered also welcoming invitations which were not reciprocated to Archbishop Kirill of the Russian Orthodox Church abroad. And so Metropolitan Joseph has contributed to this and even leading to the formation of mutual pan-Orthodox clergy meetings, which were, we got to know each other, and the bishops worshiped together, each of them granting the other role or first role in worship in each other's churches. So it was a wonderful relationship. Second, when Metropolitan Joseph met with the Episcopal Assembly, the small group of leaders in Dallas recently, I believe it was last year, there was a lot of expression about not having enough money to hold the meetings, and he offered to host them at Antiochian Village. And he said, look, let's meet together there. It will cost you nothing, and we can even celebrate the liturgy together. Because what unity could be more important than that at the chalice? And they turned him down. And then finally, Metropolitan Joseph's chairmanship of the committee, the Episcopal Assembly Committee on Pastoral Practices, has done more work than any of the other committees has done at all. So he's been very committed to the process and has actually shown good fruit on it. I know this personally because I'm involved with that committee, and I see how he works with the other bishops and the other clergy that are not Antiochian. So it's very powerful. Now, to move on to the Syrian question, this is a serious pastoral crisis of Christians in the Middle East. I cannot overstate the serious depth, the profundity of the crisis in blood that is unfolding in the Middle East and in Syria in particular, and the breakup of this country and the suffering of the Christians of every kind, not just Orthodox, but of every background. And this is a humanitarian crisis in the very fullest sense of the word. The people, not only Christian, but even Muslim sects of one kind or another, are all suffering from this. This is a very evil thing that's unfolding in the Middle East. So, His Beatitude, Patriarch Yohanna, has his hands full, and he's weeping for his children. So no matter what happens in this country, it does not matter. We have to have a spiritual sensitivity to our mother church. We have to. We have to be able to show some attention to this crisis, and we cannot have our attention turned away. However, that's not the reason for some of these other things that are unfolding. I just think it's an important thing to state that it's in the background. Actually, it's in the foreground for us because we're trying to show, you know, sure, humanitarian relief.
Now, I can understand the situation in Syria being a factor. Would it not be possible, Father Patrick O'Grady, and likely that a fully united local Orthodox church in the U.S. would have, you know, more political and even financial clout and could be of more political influence and philanthropic help than just 12 disconnected jurisdictions, each with relatively small numbers and very little influence in America and Western Europe?
Yes, no question about it. However, once again, we cannot put the cart in front of the horse. This cost of effectiveness because of our organizationally splintered presentation to the rest of people out there is it's just where we are now. We can't, like, this cannot be the basis for, well, let's all unify so we can get political action. That kind of a unity is not a good unity. It leads to serious problems. Look, Metropolitan Joseph said once, I heard him say it once regarding a small parish in the West that was struggling. He said, look, I don't close churches. Somebody said, you know, Sadney, you should just close the church. And he said, I don't close churches. I open churches. Once I open a church, I stay with it and we never go back. And this is how it is with our Orthodox situation in this country. Once we arrive at a new status quo of organizational structure to our church that's really authentic, we will never, ever go back. Therefore, we must build on a foundation of rock and not of sand so that it stays there no matter what the storm.
And I keep hearing as an underlying thought, as you're saying this, that again, the sand versus the rock is about the imposition of an agenda from without versus an organic development of unity.
This is true. There are other cross currents underneath. We could take, for example, the failure of our sister churches to act to uphold the Antiochene claims regarding its territorial incursion in Qatar. And this is a serious matter that still remains unresolved. Metropolitan Joseph has appealed to his brother, one of the hierarchs of the other jurisdictions in this country, to help him with this. And he's had promises that, yes, we'll get to this, we will settle this matter. And to no avail, after time, after time, after time, no avail. So where is the beef?
And going back for our listeners, early in the 21st century in Doha, Qatar, the ex-ambassador of the U.S., Patrick Theros, called in a Jerusalem priest who is now the Patriarch of Jerusalem to do festal services because there was no Orthodox church in Qatar, although there are many pan-Orthodox there. But in 2013, after building a cathedral, what happened is that they established a metropolitanate and basically claimed that region as their own. And I can understand the frustration of the Holy Synod. Do you think, Father Patrick O'Grady, things would be different in regard to the process for unity of the Orthodox churches in America if this situation in Qatar had been or were resolved to the satisfaction of all the parties, including Antioch? Or again, is this a new and intractable position of the Antiochians and the Patriarchate?
Well, certainly, if there was movement on this front, it would show the mutual respect that I was talking about. This is the kind of expression of charity and mutual love that is expected, that we would take up one another's issues and work together with them instead of just simply brushing them aside. There is no question about the claim of Antioch regarding the East, Arabia, and its claim here. What's strange to us is that there's such a strong and literal interpretation of Chalcedon Canon 28 regarding primacy of jurisdiction in the so-called barbarian lands. Last time I checked, we here in America are not barbarians, or the rest of the Western Hemisphere. And yet, a complete disregard for the settlement over the territorial, the pastoral territorial region of Antioch and Jerusalem that was settled at the exact same ecumenical synod, Chalcedon, and that is completely being disregarded.
I've heard others, Father, say about this territorial dispute in Doha, Qatar. They've asked, you know, why should a territorial dispute in the Arabian Peninsula take precedence over or obstruct the rightful future of the Orthodox Church in America and elsewhere? How would you respond to that?
It's very simple. We're one holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. A matter that affects one part of the Church affects all of the churches. A joy that affects one church is shared by all the churches. As St. Paul says, when one member of the body suffers, we all suffer. When another rejoices, we all rejoice.
Moving to another point, Father, that people have raised with me, there's been a lot of emphasis, as you know, within the Antiochian Patriarchate and our Archdiocese and others, since the repose of Metropolitan Philip Saliba of blessed memory on, quote, Antiochian unity, unquote. And some have asked me, why is Antiochian unity more important than American unity?
Oh, this is an overstatement of matters. Antiochian unity, of course, is very important. It's an organic unity. It's a unity of mother with children. I mean, this can never be broken. However, we are here together in America. Of course we're here together in America. And we are working, we are praying, we are sharing. We have as much participation in various organizations, pan-Orthodox organizations, as any other jurisdiction. In fact, it's some of our spiritual children that have started some of those organizations, like IOCC and the rest. If it wasn't for our active involvement, which we're constantly underscoring, then I wonder what the quality of this pan-Orthodox experience in North America would look like.
Now, speaking about the mother and daughter relationship, just as a follow-up, it's been reported that at the recent Episcopal Assembly, Bishop Gregory, primate of the Carpatho-Russian diocese, argued that it was not natural for a child when it has grown up to live with his or her mother, and that to move out on one's own does not imply that the mother-child relationship has ended, but that it takes on a more mature aspect. So my question is, Is unity with mother churches therefore only possible while being under its omophoria as an exarchate, or can there not be a continuing spiritual cultural connection with the mother churches while being a thriving independent church in North America?
Yes, this is entirely possible, and over time, no one can say never in this world, over time, things will evolve and develop relationally one way or the other, and we'll have these things expressed. This is what church history has taught us over the centuries.
But as you know, this process has been going on for 20 or 25 years. It's not just starting since the Chambasi Accords. It's been going on for quite a while.
Keep in mind that the old order, the Scoba Order, was self-determined. It was not related to the Apostolic Mother Churches. And this was part of the experimentation. We Americans love that. You know, we like to do our own thing and make it work. When it comes to orthodoxy, we have to have a higher and more connected way of doing it. Therefore, the Episcopal Assembly process is now related to the mother churches. It's a step forward, but now let it be done decently and in order.
You know, Father Patrick O'Grady, another criticism I've heard about the position statement of the Antiochian Orthodox Archdiocese in North America is that, like previous statements of ROKOR, Russian Orthodox Church outside Russia and Bulgaria, it seems to be about the Patriarchate of Antioch and the Antiochian Archdiocese, and not at all about the needs and the future of the Orthodox Church and its people in the U.S. and North America. How would you respond to that?
That's patent nonsense. First of all, in our Antiochian Archdiocese, we have people of every ethnic background. I myself haven't got a drop of Eastern blood in me. I'm as Irish-American, German, Swiss-German roots. My great-grandfather came over here from Ireland to New York, and on my mother's side, Swiss-German. I have to learn Arabic from like a baby, and I'm 65 years old, to relate to people for whom that's important. In our churches, English is the dominant language here in North America. A great deal of our clergy are not from Arabic descent or Greek descent. I think we have a very strong track record of showing our truly multi-ethnic and multicultural and truly American contextualized church.
You know, Father, the statement of the Antiochians presented at the assembly, again, rejects any restructuring of geographical boundaries as proposed by the Assembly's Committee on Regional Planning, which is to some extent in conformity with the ancient canons of church organization of one church, one bishop, one city. But even disregarding the issue of conformity to ecclesiastical and canonical standards, is it the position of Antioch that this country is best served long-term by maintaining the status quo of 12 overlapping independent bishops and jurisdictions without singular leadership polity and without a strategic vision and plan for the U.S., or is that even a concern?
Of course it's a concern, and we uphold the canonical structure of the church. One city, one bishop. This is obviously the canonical way orthodoxy unfolds, and this is what we support. We do not agree to an ethnically based vicariate, you know, overlapping, you might say, vicariates. You take care of the Russians, you take care of the Greeks, and so on. This is not our vision. Ours is an apostolic vision. And look, Antioch, from its very beginning, had a vision that was inter-ethnic and intercultural. Antioch was a great meeting place of cultures and languages, and that is our background and our history. So in this country, once again, I'd like to point to Sayedna's promotion of the confraternity of the bishops, all of the Orthodox bishops in the area of the West. You know, you could even say that if that continued apace, eventually there would be a settlement of areas, just out of an organic, you might say, relational basis. The bishops would say, let us work on organizing the proper canonical structure of our region with the blessing of our churches. And slowly then one would take care of the city, another take care of that, and all of the faithful would be consolidated. This is an organic process. It's not an institutional one. It has to come from love. It has to come from mutual charity. And this is eventually how things work out over time in the old countries as well.
But I thought that's what the Assembly of Bishops is trying to do, is to elicit suggestions from each of the 12 jurisdictions to make proposals for such a restructuring. Has Antioch made a formal proposal in contradistinction to that of the Committee for Canonical Regional Planning?
It's too early for that kind of proposal because we have not achieved the basis for it. Remember, I'm emphasizing in behalf of Sayedna the need for a solid foundation of mutual respect and egalitarianism among the bishops. If there's another agenda involved, we cannot advance to this moment.
As you know, Father Patrick O'Grady, we're a very small church. We're about 0.06% of the U.S. population, and not with growing numbers. And many non-Orthodox see the Orthodox Church in America the same way they do Protestant denominations, but based on ethnic and nationalistic grounds. So do you think this fragmented state of the Orthodox jurisdictions is a good witness to the unity and universality Orthodoxy is supposed to manifest? And how does this state of fragmentation help the cause of the Great Commission?
I think it's better to emphasize the unity that we express in any given place. For example, in Southern California, we foster, like in my parish with other parishes, we foster a constant inter- or pan-Orthodox consolidarity. Like when we worship at each other's churches and work on charitable affairs that are shared, when the clergy meet together, when they are in one another's churches celebrating their feasts, this kind of thing, when we're together in worship and in charity and mercy, then we're making the witness at the level where it counts, where people live. The rest of this will come in time. To add to this, I'd like to kind of push a little harder. This agenda of a strong, you might say, primacy of jurisdiction exercise from the Ecumenical Patriarchate, His Holiness, Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew himself never mentioned this canon. In 2008, when he was speaking to the primates of all the Orthodox churches at the Fanar, he hosted them there in 2008, I read his statement. I see nothing in here regarding the imposition of an agenda from him. I'm wondering if we could listen to what he has to say. And he says, our unity depends on our conscience. We are not able to impose a unity from anything above us. The sense of need and duty that we constitute a single canonical structure and body, one church, is sufficient to guarantee our unity without any external intervention. That was Patriarch Bartholomew's own words, and this is exactly what we agree with.
But you would not disagree, I would assume, but and please do if you do disagree, that one of the prerogatives of the Ecumenical Patriarch as the new Rome is to call together all of the brother and sister patriarchates to deal with pan-Orthodox problems and issues. So he has the right to call together all of them and say, look, this is a problem, we need to resolve it.
This is exactly correct.
Okay. Father Patrick, the Antiochian statement reads in part, quote, the Holy Synod of the Patriarchate of Antioch and her Patriarch Johanna 10, it reads John 10, remains committed to the unity of the Patriarchate with all of the Antiochian faithful wherever they are, unquote. In a recent article by Seraphim Dankart, titled A New Ecclesiology for the Orthodox Church, Seraphim posits, and many have agreed with this, that by rejecting the canonical norms of one bishop, one city, one church, jurisdictions like Moscow, Bulgaria, and some would now argue Antioch, seem to be advocating for a new ecclesiology whereby, in Seraphim Denkert's words, quote, the pastoral ministry and authority of an autocephalous Orthodox church is not limited to a specific place. On the contrary, the church exists to serve a particular people. So isn't this idea of no geographical boundaries and serving our faithful wherever they are a violation of the canons of the apostles and other canonical decrees that call for clear ecclesiastical territories?
Yes, I read this essay, and it is a typical expression of American idealism, and the sentiments in the essay point ahead to a state of affairs ideal and wonderful to contemplate. Once again, I would like to stress that these things cannot be achieved superficially. They must be achieved through the blood, sweat, and tears of interrelational settlements, of reconciliations, of agreements, of knowledge of one another. Look, we have to break bread and eat together. We have to weep together. We have to learn who we are, one with the other. And there must be then born out of that the groundwork or framework for real respect and mutuality that can lead to the establishment of these canonical norms. Look, we do not argue against the principle of one bishop, one city. This is obvious. The Holy Tradition speaks of it, and we see all the settled churches, the autocephalous churches of antiquity, with this arrangement. There's no question about it. We're just not there yet here in America, and we must be patient, and we must keep the long view that's based on the foundational values. This is what Metropolitan Joseph insists on. Organization without the deeper foundation of shared evangelical values is building a house on sand, as we've used this image many times.
Father Patrick, as we know, our 12 Orthodox jurisdictions in America, when they came to this country, were historically based on ethnic and national bases. Some still are, you know, more or less. Aren't jurisdictions based on national and ethnic grounds a form of at least neophilitism, that is, setting up of Orthodox churches for specific nationality and ethnic groups, which was declared a heresy in 1872, which, as you know, Antioch signed this 1872 document calling philitism a heresy. Does it still hold to it? And how does this thing work?
Well, it's obvious that we hold to this because nobody has ever asked me about my last name and where I come from. I've been respected as an archpriest in this archdiocese along with many others. So I can tell you the Antiochenes, we children of Antioch, have always abided by and always had dear to us. It's in our blood to resist any kind of monophyletism. This is against everything we stand for. We're truly apostolic in our view here. As for the American context, keep in mind, this is the country where people from all over the world come to for freedom to exercise their religion. Look, these poor people that have come as immigrants with poverty, with all of their household on their back over the decades and centuries that they've come here, they came speaking only their own language, maybe, and no English. And they looked for a priest that could help them in their sorrow and bury their parents and, you know, take care of their children and teach them the faith. So we have a history in this country that comes from many, many backgrounds. In Orthodoxy, we are now in an advanced state of living together, and we're getting used to each other. The children of the grandparents that spoke only those languages speak only English now, and we have that shared in our churches. It's just a matter of time. We must be patient and let this process fully work out completely. Look, in the old world, I can point to the conversion of the Bulgars or the conversion of the Slavs. It took centuries for these churches to organize themselves properly in relationship to their mother church, Constantinople. So it takes time. And not only happy, sometimes were wars between these peoples, and other times there was a strong evangelistic outreaches. History can teach us a lot if we'll take the time to listen to its lessons.
So, Father, as we're coming to a close, would it be fair to summarize the Antiochian position, and correct me if you don't like these words, that we're not against unity, but not this way and not right now?
This is a very good way to put it. I think I could stand with that as long as we stress these points. The Church of Antioch in this North American land has not reversed her stand in re the canonical unity of the Holy Orthodox Church here. This is our background. Nor is she now doing it, nor will she do it in the future. The facts speak for themselves. Ours is the church that shows the most hospitality to seekers. Our ancient patriarchate has always been trans-ethnic and multicultural from apostolic times on down. And to boot, Ours has been, through the present moment, the suffering church, bearing in our body the marks of the Lord Jesus. The chief obstacle to unity in this land is a lack of seriousness about it, according to the canonical terms. The horse goes before the cart, first the values, then the structure. All the Orthodox have an authentic part in forming this effective unity, not just one church. That is to say, unity is not based upon one outmoded culture, however romantic a view of that bygone culture, or by an innovative or extreme interpretation of the canons, such as Canon 28 of Chalcedon. Our new Metropolitan Joseph insists on speaking the truth in love, to use St. Paul's beautiful words. And the Episcopal Assembly, as it is now operating, notice I say operating, not as it's constituted to operate, as it is now operating, it cannot succeed because it is not an arena of mutual respect and equality among the hierarchs. This must be fixed. When one church insists on dominating the agenda and the proceedings, no possible way forward remains toward authentic Orthodox confraternity and its resultant unity. Unity begins with confraternity and mutual respect. This is the position of our Metropolitan Joseph.
And my guest on today's program has been the Very Reverend Patrick O'Grady, speaking on behalf of the Antiochian Archdiocese of North America. Father Patrick, thank you very much for speaking clearly and with courage with me today on Ancient Faith Today.
It's a joy to be with you, Kevin.
Thank you. And thanks to my producer and engineer, John Maddox, and my researcher and editor, Michelle Marr. And thank you for listening. And I'd like to thank Father Patrick O'Grady again for speaking with us on the record regarding this sensitive topic. We realize there are differing views about administrative unity, and we're open to giving those views exposure on our program. To date, invitations to various representatives of the Assembly of Bishops have been made, and we hope to bring a subsequent interview to you expressing a different perspective on a future broadcast. And while Ancient Faith Today is part of Ancient Faith Ministries, which is the department of the Antiochian Archdiocese, the views expressed in our interview today or in the future do not necessarily reflect the views of Ancient Faith Ministries.